Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
Right, we're back for episode 24 of Digital Divination. So, Ron, how's your week been?
I guess it's been not so bad. Quite busy. I think I mentioned that I sort of front-loaded a bunch of the writing that I normally would spread out throughout an entire year, all at the front of this year, and all my deadlines are coming up. And
yes, yes. How's that working for you?
Here's the funny side effect that I hadn't realized. Because I'm devoting so much of my Paizo work time to writing, and I'm writing sometimes until very late, until, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I am normally an exceptionally voracious reader. When I go to bed, I will read and get through. I get through a lot of books every year. And my reading has come to almost a standstill. I picked up something that I'd been reading that I realized I hadn't picked up in a couple of weeks that normally I'd be long done with and on to the next thing by now. And I'm like, I don't even remember what was going on in this. Wow, I'm doing too little reading because I'm doing so much writing.
Well, do you
how
think
about
that's
you?
Go ahead.
How about you? How was your week?
Well, it was an interesting week. I was actually reflecting on some stuff because of some things that happened this week. Yesterday, I went for my first run in 3 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And wow. It was like, it was a little tough, but I powered through it.
But 3 years. How far did you go?
3.5 miles. And it was kind of like run walk. I went to a track because I like to pace myself on a track to see how I'm doing when I'm doing this. And so I'd walk a lap, and then I'd run a lap, and walk a lap, run a lap. And I said, oh, this is going okay. So then I walked half a lap, and I ran half a lap. And I did that for 3.5 miles.
And wow.
What I'll do is I'll build up till I'm just running the whole time. Mm-hmm. But I figured it's been a while since then. But it really got me reflecting back on what's happened the past 3 years for me. And in particular, the reason why I know it's 3 years is because I had to stop refereeing basically in February of 2018, because I was too weak, too ill to run anymore. And about that time, within a month of that, I started GMing Starfinder.
Oh, okay.
Because I basically was looking for some other thing I could do. And typically I refereed all weekend, every weekend. And so, I couldn't do that. And so I started GMing Starfinder. And it just so happened that 3 years since I started, I actually GMed my 150th table and achieved my 5th Nova.
Hooray! Congrats.
Yeah. So it was kind of that interesting juxtaposition there, of like that. Now I'm looking at, I'm going to see if I can run and see if I can start refereeing soccer again. But I think I'll just do it Saturdays because I usually GM on Sundays. And play on Sundays, so I'm going to try to do both instead.
So you're not going to give it all up. You're not going to go back to refereeing, and that's it. You put away your Starfinder books. You're like, you've served me well. I am done with you now. And then pick up the referee's whistle, right? I can.
I don't think I can do that. I have like 2 bookshelves full of Starfinder stuff now, and it stares at my face all the time. It just says, I have all these literally unopened like maps and pawn packs that I need to use too, whenever we can play in person again.
Well, and that's, I've got much the same. I've done some shelf rearranging, and the thing that I realized that I could do for either Starfinder or Pathfinder, and probably could do more effectively with Starfinder, is it would be kind of fun to run an exceptionally freeform kind of homebrew where, okay, people are coming over to play. Let me literally open up one of these map packs, right? And it's Oh, and then here you are on this, I guess, look at label, desert world, when suddenly...
Yeah, it would just be like a series of encounters.
That's right, like little vignettes, right? Yeah, we can put an overarching story around it, but if you kind of build the campaign to be, and you remember when we were at da-da-da, and anyway, I think that could be kind of fun.
No, that actually sounds like a lot of fun. I've been thinking, for me, I would actually want to put together a homebrew to run. That's kind of like one of the things that I've been noodling about. But getting back to our podcast for today, you know, you started talking about writing, and I was actually thinking, and this is news to you. I haven't discussed with this you ahead of time. I actually thought that we should talk about writing for Starfinder, writing in general, but writing for Starfinder, because the other milestone I hit this week as well was I actually got my fifth and sixth contracts through Paizo.
Oh.
And again, this is like, you know, from 3 years ago, just starting to play in GMing to now I have these contracts. I actually have, you know, six credits with Legendary Games as well. It's like, you know, this has all happened in a relatively short time for me. And so I have a perspective on now writing that I didn't have then. And I know you have a perspective. So I thought maybe we could talk about, you know, writing, the process of doing it. You know, you have all this writing you're doing. How are you going to get all that done? That kind of stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And then, you know, if you've got, now you've got quite a list behind you, how would you approach the next thing? If you were given, here's a new project, I mean, how would you walk through it?
Yes. In fact, I was given one of those just by Jason Tondreau on Friday. You know, basically he said, oh, I have something for you. And he kind of described it. And he said, this is really complicated, but you've had a lot. You got a lot of playing experience. I know you can work it out. I said, oh, that's really similar to something I just wrote last month for another unannounced thing. I can do that. And he said, oh, brilliant. Great. I'll send you all the details on Monday. So I was like, oh, this is super. I'm super stoked. I'm super stoked to write.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So so you have all these things that are due, right? You have some big things that are due. What's your process to even get started? I'm kind of curious about that. And then I'll tell you what I'm thinking. I don't have near as much experience as you, but I have a certain process as well.
Well, and here, and let me tell you what I've got. I recently put up here in my home office a big whiteboard, and then once I wrote up all of the things that I'm currently writing, and then I realized the very next time I was on Zoom for something that all sorts of unannounced projects are right there on my whiteboard that it says that I'm writing for. And I'm like, oops, I can't do that, right? I have to, I want to have them up and I want to be able to remind myself what the dates are. But I have to put it with initials or a little code words for me to figure out. The two very biggest projects that I have are the ones that are sort of the anchors around which everything else moves. And as is the case with a lot of writing just about anywhere, you're given a milestone date where you have to show half your progress and then the final turnover date. And so what I have up are my milestone dates and then my final turnover dates for the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 projects I currently have going on.
Wow.
Now, one of those projects, really, we don't even start concepting yet. It's more conceptual. I don't know the specific number of words yet that hasn't been worked out. So really, it's 5 projects. But I look up here and I see, all right, well, I just had a milestone for a very big project that was due. And I know that my final is still about 4 weeks away. What's in between here and there? Oh, well, I see I've got this assignment for about 4,000 words. It's due right near the beginning of March. And I've got this other assignment that is 13,000 words that's due the second week of March. Like, all right, well, I ought to think about knocking those out. And I know that my average writing pace is about 1,000 words a day. And on, if I can devote a weekend day, then I can get sometimes as many as 5,000 or 6,000 words out. So I see this 4,000 word assignment and I think to myself, all right, well, that is probably 4 nights of work. And because I know the way it breaks out, it'll really be 3 for me. And so I'm thinking to myself, all right, well, maybe that's going to be my midweek, right? Let me, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I work that out. And then this 12,000 word assignment, right? I can kind of frame it out on Thursday night. Let me back up a step. This 4,000 word assignment, 4,000 words for me is kind of small. And I don't feel like I need to do an awful lot more framing of it than just kind of sketching out a few ideas in a sketchbook and then digging into then opening up the file and then start writing. Mm-hmm. A project that's 12,000 words, I actually am going to need to devote a night, maybe 2, to framing out what I want to say, how I'm going to break it out into different sections. Some of that's been done for me by the developer, mm-hmm. but what it is I want to produce with that. My suspicion is I'm going to be able to do that Thursday night, maybe Thursday and Friday, and then dig in and get substantially complete over the weekend. So right now I'm looking at, and then finish it up maybe on Monday night. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm looking at 2 assignments here, a 4,000 word and a 12,000 word. And I'm already thinking to myself, that kind of fills my next 7 days, but I should be done with those in the next 7 days.
Mm-hmm. So you intentionally finish them well in advance just based on what your time you have then?
I do, because I know that the final turnover for one of my 2 big anchor projects is going to be 2 weeks after that.
Right.
And I can kind of be, I guess, you know, kind of picking away at it. Mm-hmm. Right. And this is one of the things that's a real advantage on doing freelance Pathfinder 2nd edition. And this big anchor project is also Pathfinder 2nd edition. If I'm going through my day-to-day work and I'm coming up with, oh, here's a trap that seems really interesting, and maybe it's kind of mechanically hefty, I can think to myself, yeah, you know what? This trap works great at 3rd level, which is what I'm writing it for the adventure I'm developing for my day job. A 13th level version of this is going to go really well in that other adventure I'm writing. I certainly don't want to just copy it over, but if I'm doing the work for determining what triggers the effect and how the trap is disarmed with a series of skill checks and so on, that's a thing that I can carry over sort of conceptually in my mind. I might drop that over in a file in order to picking away at it, you know, little bits and pieces. But yeah, I know even past the 7 days of work, I know that I'm going to need to spend the next 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks after that, really digging into this anchor project. I don't want to be digging into the anchor project a little bit and then leave it for something small and then get back to it and then leave it again for something a little medium sized and then go back to it. That's not an effective way for me to write. So I block everything out in literally like blocky chunks, you know. I will do this for 3 days, then I will be done. I will do this for 4 days, and then I will be done. So on and so on.
Yeah, so it sounds, I mean, that sounds like a good way to manage big projects. Now, none of my projects are that big. My biggest one was, the previous one was 10,000 words. And so that would be like a small one for you, right?
Medium size. I'd say medium size.
Medium size. And then my current ones, one is 5,000, I think, and the other one is just like 3,000. So they're smaller ones. And I have those 2 concurrently with a deadline kind of a week apart. You know, the second one I just got from Tondro. Mm-hmm. And they're completely different things. You know, the things I'm working on. You know, one of them actually has a little bit more flavor to it. And then both of them have a lot of technical stuff.
Okay.
And so, like, you know, when he asked me if I had time to do it, I'm like, well, first of all, I've been reminding him a couple months. He told me he had something for me. Thanks for mentioning I should do that. But it's like, yeah, I actually have quite a bit of time. And like you, I'm not as prolific as you, but, you know, knocking out 1,000 words in a day doesn't seem like anything for me. And okay. So these all seem, you know, like the first milestone on one of them, like it's a month out. And I'm thinking I can have this done in 2 weeks. So, you know, I'm going to take my time. And like what I did before, I got everything done literally 3 weeks early. I just kept refining it and turning it in. But I guess the question I have for you related to these things, you talked about the big blocky parts you work in. Now, how much research do you actually have to do now on, say, on the Starfinder side, because that's not what you develop? You know, because like for me, you know, I have these things. I know kind of the basic core of everything that's there that I have to work on, but I have to be really careful to do a lot of research to make sure I'm not duplicating something that's already been done out there. And I find that actually takes quite a bit of time to make sure I've done that properly and then look to see how similar things have been framed previously so that I frame it the same way. Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely does. And none of the projects I've just talked about require that kind of research, but the one I'll be working on after my big anchor project, mm-hmm. it's not very big. It's only about 5,000 words, but that will require a significant amount of research. And so I will devote a couple of days to it. Mm-hmm. I will say this 4,000 word one, the one that's sort of small, part of the reason I got it, I think, is because it's sort of a natural follow-up to an adventure path mm-hmm. article that I already wrote. So, let me use an example that isn't true, but would be, be exactly right. I wrote The Blind City for Dawn of Flame, where you mm-hmm. go to that dungeon in the sun for this, mm-hmm. you know, that's the Eshtayiv is some sort of quasi, you know, light based, but lethal killer, great old one kind of entity that I sort of touch on in that. It'd be the equivalent of saying, oh, hey, Ron, you want to write a 4,000-word deity article about the Eshtayiv? Well, sure, I don't need to do a lot of research on it. All I need to do is kind of skim what I've done before because everything kind of came out of my mind or near it the last time. So what I'm doing is reminding myself of what I know. Now, part of the reason I grab projects like that is because my research time is low, and I know I've got an advantage that a lot of people don't, that I can be kind of a little bit choosy like that. So that makes my research time very low. And then the 12,000 word project, similarly comes out of some writing that I did very near the end of Pathfinder first edition. And it's, a lot of lore. And so it's lore that I wrote. So I don't have to do a whole lot of research. So that's why when I say I'm going to jump right into, you know, open up a file and start putting words on the page. Mm-hmm. That's the nature of those two products. The one that's coming up is going to require, I'm probably going to have to go through every one of the Alien archives, maybe not page by page, but I've got to see the way that monsters are built that do a specific kind of trick. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that's as easy to search for as which ones have an operative sneak attack, right? It's which ones are thematically matched this kind of thing. That's going to take me at least an evening I ought to devote to.
Right. Yeah, because just finding the right way to search, and there's probably, because it's thematically, there's a lot of various terms that would be related to it.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I was kind of wondering when you said I was just going to sit there and write, and I'm thinking, wow, that's like way down on my list of things when I get started. You know, the sitting down and getting right, that's actually the fun part, but I have to do all this other research to figure out, and I literally we'll cut and paste pieces because, you know, out of PDFs or out of the articles and archives and stuff, just to put them down to have templates of what's been done so I can see all that. And then I'll start writing, you know, and so just digging up all those. And again, I'm pretty new at this, right? And I want to make sure I don't screw it up and get things in the right format and not duplicate things so that they have to just toss it completely.
Yeah, I think that's actually not anything that ever stops, right? Mm-hmm. Because even as much writing as I've done, I say I've got this 5,000 word project on the horizon that's going to require oodles of research. I could not do the research. I could just dig in, and that wouldn't necessarily produce a very good product. Mm-hmm. A good way to ensure that I don't get top choice of projects in the future, right? To turn in stuff that just isn't very good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I presume the developers, you know, when they're assigning something in a certain area, they probably know a lot of that background that you should be looking at. Or is that incorrect? Know these things.
They don't know it, but they know where to find it. That is to say, when I'm making an assignment, I'll give a list of resources in the assignment. Say, look at these places. Mm-hmm. And it is always kind of a delight to me. It's a little bit embarrassing, but also a delight when a freelancer says, oh, shouldn't I also look at X because that's this other source has, you know, source X has a lot of information about that too. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh man, I probably should have suggested that in the first place. Yes, yes, please do.
Now, yeah, I always kind of wonder, because there's so much ground to cover, and you know, it's different developers working on different titles. So, you know, I mean, if you're looking at Starfinder, right? So it could be that, you know, a third of the stuff that's being covered you worked on, but there's two thirds that other people developed, or even more.
That's right. And there is a little bit of onus on us as developers to pay attention to what the other developers are doing. Mm-hmm. But that's just to be sort of a good work citizen in our own space. That is to say, I didn't develop the Fists of the Ruby Phoenix adventure path for Pathfinder 2nd Edition. Patrick Rainey did that. But I need to know kind of what's in there, right? And where the key locations are and who the key NPCs are. Because if I do something that touches on those locations or NPCs, I need to know about it. Mm-hmm. That said, I don't necessarily need to have, as a Pathfinder developer, a full and complete knowledge of the Fly Free or Die adventure path that Starfinder's doing. Mm-hmm. Because that's not necessary for my day-to-day work necessarily. There is some spillover, right? We talk about how developers generally make assignments, how developers generally do narrative pacing. There's actually kind of a lot in common for us to talk about. But if I'm doing something that involves merchants in starships, if I can give it a freelance project that's like, and this is about merchants flying around and bartering cargo, ooh, I got to start from square one in reading about how that's done in Fly Free or Die, because that's a necessary basis for that.
Mm-hmm. So how much do developers talk about assignments or things that freelancers have done for them?
Oh, like what you mean subject specifically, or how the freelancers have done?
Well, kind of both. And so the reason why I ask this, so I've done now a couple projects. Actually, I think this is my third project that had Compton and Joe Piscini related to it. Mm-hmm. And then this is the first thing I've done for Tondro. And so he's asking me to do something, again, he phrased it, oh, this is really complicated, but I think you can handle it. And it's like, well, this is exactly something very similar to the bigger project I just did, you know? And so there, obviously, he did not know things I'd been working on in the past for other people.
Right. And that actually comes up, that even comes up within the same space. I think that, for example, I wrote adventure for Pathfinder 2nd Edition that sort of starts in the city of Kibwe, which is in our version of Fantasy Africa. And I even, as part of the adventure I wrote, there's a little gazetteer all about Kibwe. And Eleanor Farron, who is doing the development of a whole big Mwangi Expanse book, she knew. Somebody had mentioned, oh, Ron wrote this thing about Kibwe. All right, well, and then she assigned me. She's like, Ron, I'm going to need, you know, 2,300 words about Kibwe. You know, you wrote everything that there is about that second edition. So we hope you'll do a good job. Go. And only recently, and I think she's like doing the copy fitting of that book, somebody mentioned this adventure and how you go to a different site. You stay in Kibwe the whole time. You go to this different site called Holy Zatramba. She's like, wait, what? Should I have known about that before I assigned a different freelancer to write all about Holy Zatramba for this book that is now already edited and in layout and I'm copy fitting it right now? So fortunately, no, it turns out that the two didn't intersect in a way that required some big changes. But we can get blindsided from time to time by that, because we don't go into very specific detail about the assignments. Adam Daigle was my developer for the adventure, you know, the adventure that starts in Kibwe. And he might have said, oh, you know, I have a freelancer who's writing this adventure that starts out in Kibwe. But he didn't go into much more detail than that. Nobody checked, right? He didn't go into a lot of detail about all the plot points of it, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes we do our best to stay informed, but there are things that will still continue to kind of blindside us.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It wouldn't surprise me if that's what happened with this assignment from Jake Tron. I think it is probably more likely that he either looked over the outline or sort of heard tangentially that you'd done this type of work. And that's part of the reason he might have come to you. But it, I mean, it may be that he didn't know, and it just happened to be happy coincidence that you're the exactly right person for the job.
Well, that's what it struck me as. But I, you know, I was just kind of curious, you know, how much people talk. So now you mentioned that the, you know, you kind of got first choice on things. And I noticed from, you know, several of the assignments and how things are assigned that there will be certain, Paizo folks already assigned to sections before, you know, our names have gone in, you know, how they do that. Should we talk about how they solicit people for
yeah,
art
that's
stuff?
What happens is, and the reason this happens is because putting together a robust outline for a project takes time. It goes through several iterations. There's a lot of stakeholders that have to see it. And that simply can't be shared with exterior freelancers early in the process, right? Because things may change, the number of work, an entire subject might be dropped, an entire subject might be expanded. So we don't really want to share that, even though we trust our freelancers and they're under a non-disclosure agreement. So they not only can they not share the information, but they're great about, in fact, not doing so despite the legal restriction on doing so. They're just because they're very professional people. Yeah. But we don't want to get it out when there's going to be some changes back and forth. And so I can show internally to people, hey, here's a book I want to do about, you know, bakers of the inner sea. And, you know, John Compton might say, oh, you know, we talk about cuisine in Druma. That should go into your bakers of the inner sea. I'm like, oh, well, I'll get that in my next revision of this. Hey, John, would you be interested in writing up, you know, 2,200 words about the cuisine of Druma? Why, Ron, I'd love to. And so the outline gets completed with his name already slotted in place. That said, so we actually get some early chances like that sometimes.
Yeah, and so once the solicitation is kind of sent out, so for me, the last couple of times, it's been in two waves, it seems like. So they'll send it out. Hey, we're working on a project. How many words are you interested in writing? I think is how it started.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you kind of submit that, and then they send out a second wave. And this last time, it was like the next day or 2 days later. So everybody must be responding pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. If you want the job, respond quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, you know, for sure, by that next day, it seemed like. And then they say, okay, so here's all the different sections. They kind of outline all the different sections that are going to be in that thing. And these are for hardcovers. Mm-hmm. And then they say, which sections are you interested in? Put them in a preference order, right?
Yep.
And so you submit that. And then what happens?
Ooh, you know, that's a really good question. And the reason that I respond with sort of abject puzzlement is I haven't worked on anything that operates that way. Because what I do is the adventure paths.
Right,
I am assigning in the wave of here are the six people who are going to be writing the six adventures. And after I've already talked to them about how much of the back matter is necessarily tied to their adventure and they want to write, then I go looking for people to fill in back matter articles or some of the monsters or things like that work through the back matter. So I'm not ever asking people first how many words. Okay, spread out the number of words on the table to determine. Okay, now here are the sections. Which of these sections do you like? I mean, the closest to that I guess I ever come is I might send out to somebody to say, hey, I'm locking down all my authors for this upcoming, you know, adventure path where everybody is bakers and it's a great cooking competition adventure path. And I know I'm going to do two deity articles, you know, I'm going to do an article about the good baking deity in volume 2 and about the evil baking deity in volume 3. What do you want to write, one or the other of those? You know, that, you know, maybe I'll give people kind of a specific choice that way, but it's I don't ever have to do the sort of jigsaw puzzling of who wants to write what number of words, in what priority do they want to write it, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes I'll work in, and I think I've mentioned this in the past, I'll intentionally put myself near the back end of that jigsaw puzzling. I've had a couple of projects where people have asked, oh, you know, what would you like to write in this? And my response has been, just give me what nobody else wants.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Yeah. I want the other things that people are least interested in, because I will do my absolute best to make them interesting. Mm-hmm. But I do know that we have, you and I just discussed about how we had one of those sorts of projects where you and I both responded to the initial solicitation with our preference ranking. And I got something that was really, really low on my list. And my very first number one thing I wanted was the thing that you got. So
yes, and I got stuff that was really high on my list. So.
Well, you know where their value is, right? I get. I'm going to think highly of myself with this. Given the option, I almost always choose to think highly of myself. I'm just that egotistical of a person, I guess. I think what I'm going to say is they might have thought, even if we give Ron something that's really low on his priority list, he will work hard on it and love it and make it an awesome thing. So maybe that's maybe that's why I got kicked down. That's okay, because I'm going to do exactly that. As soon as I saw what I was assigned, my thinking is, oh, that was really low on my list, but I could do X and I could do Y and I could do Z. So I'm actually really excited about it.
Now, yeah, it's interesting because I thought the things you had were all, don't they all have the same theme?
They do. They do.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that there's some synergies that kind of make sense to put them all together.
Yep.
So it was on your list then, right?
I believe so.
Got stuck then.
I did. Wasn't it? It's a scene in Heinlein's Starship Troopers where the main character goes into the military and he has to rank what his choices are, what he wants to do.
Right, right, right.
And so somebody looks over the choice and says, hey, did you ever have a pet? And he's like, no, I've never had a pet. Why would you ask that? And suddenly he realizes that second to the bottom on his list was something that worked with animals. And the guy crosses that off, and then the very bottom of his list, infantry, is what he ends up getting into.
Yes, I think that's what happened.
And I have a good friend of mine who is she's a doctor in Alaska, and just loves it. But when she was in medical school, I think it was in medical school where she would go after that, where she would be performing her residency or something like that. The fact that Alaska was on her list at all meant she went to Alaska. And she didn't realize it at the time, but the fact that she'd ranked it at all as a place she'd be even somewhat willing to go, there you go. Alaska needs doctors.
Yeah, that was when I was in the service and they were kind of selecting where you went. It's kind of the same way. You know, you were lucky if you got anything on your list at all, but if you had a place that really they had a hard time filling on your list, that's where you were going.
That's where you were doing.
There's no questions. No questions.
Maybe you know, that's how I got what I got.
Yes. No, I think that's kind of cool. You know, I'm really excited about that particular project. And I told you why, you know, part in that. But I was also really excited to get something from Jake Tondro, because I've been trying to get into his sort of stuff for a while. Can we talk more about that, a potential pipeline for that kind of thing, or?
Sure. Like, how you get into back matters of things.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you get into any of these things? But in particular, like I've been trying to get into doing something for an AP. How do you do that? How do you get in there other than bug people?
Bugging people works, frankly. In usual days, when we actually have conventions, a big piece of my time when I'm at a convention is having people come up to me and say, I'm interested in writing, you know, and here's what I've done in the past. Here's where my interests are. Here's where my non-gaming experience is, is something I've done that's sort of applicable. If somebody is, I haven't done a lot of game writing, but I'm, you know, really deep into sort of, you know, Middle East history. Mm-hmm. And, oh, you know, oh, all right, well, there's actually kind of a lot of things that we might be able to use for that, you know. You know, give business cards so that people can, you know, so that like I can, you know, remember who you are. Maybe I can sketch, you know, just jot something down on the business card that I keep to remind me of who you were, because I've been given lots of these. And then we usually post convention, we'll often have a meeting where we talk about who we met and what seems interesting, or like, and all the developers, Starfinder, Pathfinder together, will come together. And it's always, you know, sort of, frankly, sort of great when we're like, oh, that person reached out to me too. Oh, that person also reached out to me. And like, and six of us have the same person's business card. Well, that, what that says is that they're serious, right? Mm-hmm. That they've taken time out of their convention when they could be having fun throwing dice and killing monsters to go network. There is sort of a general concern that networking itself requires a certain set of social skills, mm-hmm. that not everybody has. And frankly, some people who are otherwise phenomenal writers might not have, and that kind of shuts them out of the ability to get jobs. And that's something that we're always mindful of and we keep in mind. Mm-hmm. These days I'll get people who email me and say, you know, hey, I'm interested in doing work for you. If they've done something for somebody else at Paizo, they'll say, I did this other thing for somebody else at Paizo. I had somebody recently reach out to me that I actually knew and gamed with many, many years ago. And he's since built up sort of a resume of writing outside of Pathfinder, Starfinder, but is interested in breaking into either of those. And now he's kind of got some chops developed in other third-party publishers where he's able to say, I've done X and Y and Z. You know, so we're able to send things that way. If somebody is not particularly well tested, I want to give them at least one, usually a set of two back matter monsters. Mm-hmm. That's intentional. It's focused. It's not a very big lift. It's 500 words per monster, but monsters are a very interesting intersection of requiring some specific rules, ability in order to stat them up correctly, and an ability to write evocatively to describe them, mm-hmm. and research to know kind of what other or similar monsters are out there or what they do. And the ability to convey all that in a very tight space, which is really hard.
Right. I noticed that. Can we talk about?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So you actually assigned a couple to me for mm-hmm. something, because you originally had them assigned to somebody else who couldn't do them.
Right.
And I expressed some interest. And I was actually amazed at how tight the space was after you did all the stat block and everything. And, you know, the general advice that you'd given was, stat it first before you start trying to do the flavor. And that was like 100%, because I didn't have enough room, you know, to do everything, say everything I wanted to say about it.
Yep. Yep. And that actually is a good way to sort of prove yourself kind of early on to us in the AP side. And mm-hmm. there are some people who are just really, really good at monsters. Mm-hmm. And I will try to ask those people if they want to do something else, but I want to keep giving them monsters too, right?
right.
You know, these are people who, you know, they've not just plainly done their research into what monsters already exist, but they're trying to, you know, look into like real world cryptids or lore about things, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. That's been really good. But then from there, right, a next bigger step, if your rules were more solid than your writing, than your narrative, or frankly, depending on the needs I have, I might ask for some rules items that go in the back of an adventure. You know, hey, I'm going to need about 1,400 words of spells. Can you give me 1,400 words of spells that are around this particular theme of, you know, this level range and so on. You know, I might ask for something like that. Back matter articles is a place where I might put people with some very strong narrative chops as well. You know, I'm going to need you to describe this part of this country in some pretty specific detail. And yeah, you've got to do like our form of city stat block, but mostly it's about making this settlement come alive, right? And the mm-hmm. region around mm-hmm. it. So that's sort of the next move from there. At the same time, all of us are sort of talking. And so if we get people that we really like, you know, we'll talk amongst each other, you know, with other developers, you know, here's this person, you know, they knocked this out of the park, or I'm working with so-and-so, you know, was weak on X, but then got better at it. And, you know, frankly, some of the highest praise that we share with each other is this person didn't do a very good job in their milestone with just, you know, something. And I gave them some feedback and they took it to heart, worked through it, and then got substantially better, right? Mm-hmm. They're paying attention and they're working hard and getting better. We're all like, ooh, that's the kind of person that we all want. Somebody that's actually putting some real professional effort into this. But at the same time, we'll say things like, you know, hey, if you need rules done exceptionally tight and they're not going to require a lot of work and they're really innovative, then here's the person that you need to do. But they go a little bit wahoo with a lot of purple prose when you give them narrative. So they would need some, they might need some hand holding on that, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing. Oh, you know, and sometimes we're wrong, right? Sometimes we're like, you know, hey, maybe you're ready for this, and I'll get something back. Go, yeah, maybe you weren't ready for that just yet, but you know, we hope everything's a learning process. So
now it seems like there's a style form for every different type of deliverable you can have, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So is that something like the very first thing I did? I actually didn't realize that was the case. So I don't know if that was given to me or not, you know, because I did Starship Operation Manual. So it's a building starships. It's kind of like, you know, you have a certain stat block and everything, and that was fine. But the narrative stuff I had to write, I don't actually recall receiving a style guide for that. Subsequent things I have, and I've worked very hard to fit everything precisely in the style guide properly. Mm-hmm. How much do people look at things that, those sorts of things, the not in written stuff, but fitting the style guides and getting everything done on time, hitting your milestone, hitting your deliverable on time?
Those matter an awful lot, an awful lot. Certainly being timely is something that will make you stand out. I think I'm where I am at Paizo now because of my timeliness. And let me go back a little bit. I wrote volume 6 of the first edition Adventure Path, where you play a bunch of evil characters, Hell's Vengeance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think my 6th adventure was the first one. I think I was a little bit early, but I think my 6th adventure was the first one turned in for that entire Adventure Path. That is, I think they were all due within a very narrow period of time, but everybody was running a little bit late. The other authors, maybe they got an extension or had something happen. I don't know what the specifics were, but my number 6 ended up being in first. And that sort of hit everybody's attention. Like, the very last one came in first. This guy's got it in, you know, really well, really fast. It was good to do. And so later on, when Paizo needed to outsource its development work because things were just too heavy internally, we've outsourced editing before, but they hadn't ever outsourced development work. And when Wes Schneider called me up, he's saying, you know, some people around here are saying maybe we shouldn't be, you know, doing this sort of outsourcing of development to you, but, you know, I think that maybe it's something that we need. I think I could tell by the tone of his voice that Wes himself was one of those people who didn't necessarily think it was a great idea. So I had to convince him, and I lied. I told him, hey, I'm actually coming into Seattle anyway. Can I just sit down and chat with you about it? And it was only a half truth. I had a friend in Seattle that I was actually kind of desperate to find an excuse to come visit. I didn't already have a ticket in hand, but I had a reason to come to Seattle to visit this friend of mine. But I combined that with the visit to the Paizo offices, and people there told me, you know, hey, part of the reason that you're being considered for this is because you pay attention, so much attention to deadlines. And that is so necessary in a monthly published things like we have. the player companion line at the time, the adventure paths and so on, that's really highly valued. So that absolutely gets you noticed. It's absolutely important to us that you're hitting your deadlines. As far as the styles go, I've gone through a little bit of growth on this. Yes, using our styles is important. So some of the stuff that I do, maybe even a lot of the stuff that I do, even if it is styled correctly when it gets to me, I am likely to strip all the styles out of it and then manually put them back in when I do my development. I will say, John, I'm going to do that for your monsters, right?
Okay.
But that you put them correctly styled in the first place shows us, one, that you're paying attention, two, that you're somebody who is, you're paying attention to what our styles are, two, you're somebody that pays attention to details, and then three, starts to build you up as one of those people for whom I don't need to, eventually might not need to, strip the styles out and manually add them as I develop, which means you're likely to be working towards being someone who is very reliable on a quick turnaround. One of the things that makes people the kind of people we go to and say, I hate to do this, but I'm in a real bind here and I've got this 3,300 word article and I'm going to need it in like a week and a half, if you can give it to me, two, maybe up to two and a half, if you need a little more time. You know, people who, we're only going to give that to people who we know can work quickly and hit their deadlines and whom we know have a real handle on our styles so that we don't have to take that step. But it's also, if you're using our styles, you've also understood that you can't have a header followed by another header, that you have to put some text in between. You know you have to put some text in between because you styled it right. That sort of helps lean you towards the process that we have, that we use. I don't necessarily judge people for not doing it right. Our styles are kind of arcane, and and not getting it right is something I don't judge people for. I just had a turnover that I'm starting to dig into where I can tell that the freelancer tried, but just I think literally every line of it is styled wrong. That's okay. I'm looking at content in addition, you know, far more than I am looking at the styles, but that's the kind of thing that's going to elevate you from a good freelancer that we use to one of the reliable workhorses we use a lot.
Yeah, I was actually curious about that because there's no real explanation on how to use your style guide. It's just this, and one of the things I had to do actually is open the books that were similar sections that I was writing to understand how it all worked together, right? To see how it worked. And then realizing that, so when I first started doing them, I was manually trying to create the styles in the document I had. And I realized that was the wrong approach. I had to use, so there are certain styles that weren't available in Word because they were specific styles to you guys,
right?
It seemed like. And so I had to go redo everything in your style guide, basically using, so I had all the styles available and then create it up. And it was weird trying to figure it out. So
ask your developer, because giving you the styles document and giving you one of our many quick primers on how to use it is something that we ought to be doing. That's important to give people the right kind of.
I figured it out. For that particular thing I was working on, I had like five different sections. And so, you know, I worked through one section that I realized, I need to do it this way. And so all the other sections, I did it the right way from the start rather than having to go back and redo it. So it just took time. I do have a question about timeliness. Now, the last thing I did, I actually finished 3 weeks early. And rather than turning it as is, I kept going through it to the point where I actually thought it was quite good when it was done. But, you know, I don't know how much those iterative steps really improved it that much. I'm curious, like the things I have now, I actually have a lot of time for things I think I'm going to knock out really quickly. Like I have a milestone that is literally like right at the start or near the end, somewhere around my spring break. I'm going to have like 10 days off, and that's pretty much all I need to work on during that time. So I think I can knock it out really quickly. Is there any benefit to turning something in really early?
Not usually. It is, okay. I mean, it's a load off our mind to know that we check it out.
Right.
You get paid sooner, usually. I mean, not always. Our obligation to pay is based on your deadline, and sometimes the finances work that way. But no, because generally when I'm setting up my work calendar, I will set aside time, for example, to review milestones on the milestone date. And so if you've given it to me 2 weeks sooner, if I get a break, I might be able to take a look at it, but I haven't really set aside time to look at it until the day the milestone was due. So it might actually just sort of sit on my system.
Oh, sure.
2 weeks. One of the better reasons to keep it until the milestone date is because you might have exactly that kind of iterative process you do. You're like, I'm going to take another quick look at this. Or you might actually move on to some other project. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've got this really awesome kind of Envoy ability. You know what? That project that I keep noodling on because it's done, but it's not turned in yet. Something like this Envoy ability flavored differently for a monster, maybe might actually go really well on that monster. That's happened to me a couple of times where I'm like, I think I can make this thing a little bit better by taking a little bit more time. Let me let it sit for 2 or 3 days and then go back and look at it with a fresh eye. Proofreading is almost always done better if you're able to let something sit for a while and clear out the buffer in your brain in order to put it back in.
Those of us that don't have an expert, you know, professional proofreader, that is.
Right? That's correct. Not everybody has a PhD in English at hand in order to. So that's helpful. I would say don't stress out too much about getting it in. Here's actually kind of a little. Maybe a little trick to make your developers' lives easier. It makes my life easier. If I'm expecting a bunch of different things on a Monday, and Monday is often the day we have these things due, just because that way we can plan out during the week to get them reviewed. If I've got something that's due from you on a Monday, emailing it to me midday Friday puts my mind just a little bit more at ease for the whole weekend, right?
Aha. That's what I did last time. And that one I did early, I send it in on Friday.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Good. So I wasn't sure, but I wasn't going to work on it over the weekend. So I thought I'll send it in Friday before the end of the workday so that they know they got it.
Yep. Exactly so, right. And I do think most of us will say the date that something is due, we would very much like it in our inbox when we sit down to go to work on that day. Mm-hmm. I mean, technically, you could get it to us at 11:59 p.m. on that day. You know, we certainly can't ding you for that. We've told you the date that it's due, and you've given it to us on that date. Mm-hmm. You haven't failed any technical requirement, for sure. But generally, if I'm saying something's due on such and such date, I'd like it by the time I sit down at my desk at about 9 or 9:30 in order to do so. Oh, plus, I don't even start my working day till 9 or 9:30.
Yes. All right. You know, this has actually been pretty informative. I've talked to a lot of people about how they get into writing and things that they've done and everything. But now that I'm kind of seeing the inner workings a bit more, you know, I have more questions. And so these have been very informative for me, and hopefully other people have kind of found it to be as well.
Yeah, I think that people who start their freelancing careers, a lot of them come up with these same kinds of questions. You know, I've gotten before, hey, Ron, how important is styles really, right? Hey, Ron, do I really distinguish myself for being on time all the time? You know, yes, right? Jake Tondra will say that, you know, any writer will either give you stuff that is just super excellently written, and they'll do it on time, and they'll do it, the third one. You get two of the three, right? It's either really excellent and on time or... I don't even remember what the third
style. Was. Maybe style. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe interview him again, John. That'll.
Yes. All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I hope you didn't mind. I sprung this on you.
Not at all. I like it. I can opine on just about anything.
Yeah, I'm going to test those limits.
Oh, now I'm worried.
All right. I'm John,
and I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.